Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. Most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Hello and welcome to the Movie Squad podcast, your weekly compendium of all things Movie Squad, where we compile our reviews from the week that was. You can hear Movie Squad every Friday morning on RTR FM 92.1 at 7:30 a.m., usually with host Taylor Strano. But once again this week, we are joined by Emma Lucia, who's filling in. And similarly, filling in for Tristan Fidler this week, we have Cecilia Allen.
Hello, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. My name is Simon Morado. Really excited to share two interesting, fun, critical reviews with you this week. I suppose that my review, the second of the hour, is the critical one. I take a look at Thor, Love and Thunder. We left it off last week because we figured, people know that's coming out. We don't need to give that a spotlight. But finally caught up with the movie, Cecilia, and yeah, it wasn't my bag.
No, I liked your review, though. It was very critical, wasn't it?
It was very critical. The critique was very critical. You know what the tone was? I'm reflecting on it now. It was melancholy.
Melancholy. I do like your honest opinion of the film, though. Tell it how it is.
You've got to tell it how it is, folks. And I like when you tell it how it is, Cecilia, because you kick us off this week with The Phantom of the Open.
Yes, I dubbed it a dark kind of black comedy, but a true story, about Morris Flitcroft, a British crane operator who became known as Britain's worst golfer. And it stars Mark Rylance in the role of Morris. Very interesting film. Someone I didn't know anything about. So I always enjoy going to see a film and coming out and knowing more. It's educational.
Be educated now. Let's hear your review of The Phantom of the Open.
I knew a young man once, said he was going to be somebody. Promised champagne, caviar.
I'll give you champagne, caviar.
You should have married him.
That's the light of my life, Jean. I love her very, very much. And my sons, they love disco dancing. Where I come from, it's a small world. If you could do anything, what would you do?
I don't know.
The world's your oyster. What we got to lose?
And that one was for the title.
Golf.
Golf?
I'm going to have a crack at the British Open.
It's Movie Squad this morning, and I've got Cecilia and Simon with me. Guys, how you going?
We're doing good.
Doing well.
How are you?
I'm well. I'm now caffeinated.
You're caffeinated, and it's your second week as part of the Movie Squad, and now you're fully comfortable. You have strong opinions on every film, and have you seen anything in the last week?
The only thing I've watched, actually, which is not recent at all, was Arrival, or The Arrival. I've seen both. I've seen Arrival, and The Arrival was what I watched.
You watched the one with Charlie Sheen?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay.
I hadn't seen it before, and I was like,
He's got a very interesting goatee in
yes,
that film.
Yes, he does.
Does it stand up 20-odd years later?
No.
Did it stand up at the time? Probably not. What is the scenario where you're going, you know what I'm going to watch tonight? It's Charlie Sheen's The Arrival.
I don't know. I was in the mood for Aliens. I was like, I just felt like I should educate myself. I've sort of seen it pop up here and there with people chatting about it. Not always in a good way, but I was like, you know what? I feel like something B grade right now. Sometimes you do. So
that's okay. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
I think if you're going into that going, I've heard that this is a really thoughtful, interrogative piece of our relationship with the extraterrestrial life. Maybe you were inspired by that beautiful photograph that came out this week about the galaxies.
Yeah, I think that actually, you know what? Knowing my brain, that is exactly what happened because I am space obsessed and I was really taken by the photograph. So I reckon that's the line of thread that's
and
got
you're like,
me there.
The only thing that'll satisfy this unquenchable passion for the galaxies is Charlie Sheen in a goatee dealing with the galaxy.
There's nothing like a good B-grade film, though, just to help you unwind at the end of a long day.
So. That's 100% the vibe. And, yeah, my expectations were low. So,
good.
You know, it didn't disappoint in that way. But anyway, what films are we going to jump into today?
Well, I'm talking about a film called Phantom of the Open, which is based on a true story, interestingly. And Simon, you're reviewing Thor.
Thor, Love and Thunder. So we'll get into the galaxy discussion shortly. But I think Phantom of the Open is one to discuss because Thor, Love and Thunder, it's been out for a week. Cecilia and I, it occurred to us at the end of last week's episode that we didn't even mention the fact that this giant film had been released. So there's so much interesting stuff to talk about. And having now seen Thor, Love and Thunder, I still maintain there's more interesting stuff to talk about. So
excellent.
I'd rather hear about Phantom of the Open first.
Why not? This is a film directed by Craig Roberts. And it was like, I know that name. So I did a bit of a Google search, and Craig Roberts is 32 years old, mind you. So he's directed this film. He's that very awkward kid from that film Submarine a few years ago. I don't know if you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Mm. But I did not know he was.
Interestingly, he's now a director, which is fantastic. And he's done another film, which the name escapes me, Eternal Something, which stars, I think it's got Sally Hawkins and Billy Piper in it. But I'm definitely going to check it out based on the fact that it's by Craig Roberts.
And Sally Hawkins played his mum, I think, in Submarine,
yes,
if my memory serves.
Exactly.
And Submarine was so great, and he was probably just 20 in that film. But he definitely had a comic sensibility in that movie, and it seems like he's brought that to the films he's made.
Yeah, Eternal Beauty is the film that I'm thinking of that he's also directed. So he's got a few films under his belt at the moment. But this is the true story of Morris Flitcroft, a man who I had never heard of going into this film, and I don't know if you guys had either.
No.
But he was a British crane operator who became known as Britain's worst golfer. So it's set in 1976. He's working at this shipyard. Things are not too great at this point. You've got, you know, Margaret Thatcher doing her thing in the background, and there's talk that there's going to be some, you know, layoffs at work. So one night Morris is at home and he's watching his brand new TV, one of those really old ones where the remote control is kind of connected to the TV, and he comes across the British Open on TV, and he goes, "Ah, that doesn't look too hard. I might give that a go." He's never played a game of golf in his life, but thinks, hey, it might be fun. And he does. And then he applies for the British Open, which is a pretty professional league. You can apply as an amateur, but you have to have a good handicap. I'm not well versed in the game of golf.
It's either a good handicap or a bad handicap.
Yeah. I can't remember which one it is. But he decides to apply for the British Open. And it's quite a funny scene when he's doing so, because he gets the piece of paper and they ask you what your handicap is. And he goes, oh, well, I've got a bit of arthritis, that, you know. So he doesn't quite understand the game. But because he doesn't really understand what that means, he just ticks professional golfer. So he gets accepted. At this time, there's not much on the internet. Well, there's no internet really, so you can't go searching these people. So they let him in thinking he is a professional. And he just plays a really terrible game of golf, finishing with a score of 121, which is bad in golf. So despite this kind of overwhelming failure, he doesn't kind of make it to the next level. But the media fall in love with this guy because he's just so easily liked and down to earth, and he just thinks that, you know, everyone should be given the opportunity to play a round of golf. But he gets kicked out, but then he does attempt to re-enter multiple times under different names and different disguises, and succeeds getting through multiple times. So quite an interesting fella. You've also got Sally Hawkins in this film as Jean Flitcroft, his very supportive and humble wife. It's quite a surreal comedy. There are some darker moments in the film, particularly being set in the UK in the 70s, where layoffs were quite rife in this particular part of the UK. So they do struggle with a little bit of kind of money issues, I suppose. But it's such an interesting look at someone's life that I had no idea about, and someone who just wanted to play a game of golf and kept going and didn't give up.
Well, it does sound very funny. You know, like, it sounds like a, you know, the comedic premise sounds very funny, but it does also feel like it comes from that lineage, and I haven't seen it, but I'll ask you, Cecilia, of films like Brassed Off, The Full Monty, Billy Elliot even, which are about that, you know, that Thatcher era, with so many Labour layoffs. I don't want to say how much of a bummer does it get to be, but would you say it's more explicitly a comedy?
It's interesting because you see the trailer to this film and you do think it's a full-blown comedy, but I would it's not. It's more of a kind of black comedy if you were going to sub it into any comedy genre, just based on the fact that it is funny in moments, but there are those kind of, surreal moments in there, the authentic moments. So it makes for a good film because you get a real idea of, Morris and his family and what he lived through, and his desire to actually play golf was probably driven by the fact that he did need some money at this time. So I wouldn't say it's a full-blown comedy at all. I think probably more of a black comedy, if anything, because you do get those laughs, but some of them you wonder, well, why am I laughing at that? That's a bit cruel. So, but look, it's interesting. I always enjoy going to see a film about someone I knew nothing about, and I think Morris was a great person, and they even have this tournament over in the US, which is designed to play the worst game, and you're the winner if you are the worst golfer. So if you score the highest, that's right,
yeah.
Higher in golf, isn't it? Is the worst score?
Yes.
Thank you.
You a golfer?
Oh gosh,
no. Look, I was going to say the only golfing experience I have is actually playing it on the. On the PlayStation.
Yeah, Microsoft Golf on the old PC.
Yeah, it's actually bonded our family. We're obsessed with it.
Oh, wow.
It's quite meditative, this one that we play. I don't know. I don't know anything about PlayStations. Literally, this is the only game I can play. So, but yeah, that's about my experience. But look, that has given me some appreciation for golf, I have to say. But yeah, this film sounds like, I watched the trailer and I thought it was going to be way more lighthearted. I'm definitely always up for like a redemptive story. There was someone, it's not too late giving it, chasing after their dreams.
Yeah, I don't want to put people off too much. It's not dark or anything. It's just not a full-blown comedy. There are some darker moments to deal. Yeah.
Understated,
exactly. But it's still funny enough and lighthearted, and you do get a sense of, some of his pseudonyms going into golf. He plays a Frenchman at one point. He's an American and then a German, I think. So, well,
Cecilia, I have to ask you. So Mark Rylance plays Marcus
Flitcroft? Yes, I didn't even mention
Mark
that.
Rylance is an incredible actor. Mm. And I remember 10-odd years ago, Bryan Cranston was being interviewed about Breaking Bad, and he was asked, who is the actor you admire and look up to? And he said, oh, it's this guy, not in many films, not really well known outside of the UK, but his name is Mark Rylance. And at the time, he was acclaimed for Jerusalem, which was a play he'd done. I think he was in Wolf Hall at that time. And then he won the Oscar for Bridge of Spies, the Steven Spielberg movie. And now is in everything, it is in high demand, and has been starring in a lot of like comedic roles. And he was in Don't Look Up, as that sort of Elon Musk-like character. And now in this kind of film, from the trailer, it feels like he's playing a broad comedic role. So I am curious to know, does he land the comedic performance, or are we getting to see some of that, dramatic heft that we know he can do?
I think he lands the comedic role. There is a time and place in the film where, he's more serious, but for the most part, he does land it. And there's some side kind of comparisons to the real Morris Flitcroft at the end, so you get a sense of who he was as well, and they're very, he does a really good job in portraying him. He was kind of this really down-to-earth guy who just didn't really realise he was that bad at golf, and I think that, so he really does a good, job embodying that and the real Morris Flitcroft from what I've seen with that footage at the end of the film where he's being interviewed. And so I think he does a really good job, and I think he's a fantastic actor. And I was going to say underrated, but he's not really underrated anymore. I think he was for some time, but now he's kind of been pushed out and given lots of opportunities.
I love when movies do that. I think any movie based on a real story has to have the comparison at the end, and every other movie has to have bloopers.
Yeah,
and that should be legislated.
100%, I agree. Well, if you know a little bit more about golf, or if you know about this character, please text in 0405 921 921, or there is the email studio@rtrfm.com.au. Don't go away. Movie Squad Part 2 will be up in just a moment.
Kids, get your popcorn out. Let me tell you the story of the space Viking, Thor Odinson. He was no ordinary man. He was a god. After saving planet Earth for the 500th time, Thor set off on a new journey. Well, he got in shape. He went from dad bod to god bod. And after all that,
Mjolnir,
he reclaimed his title as the one and only Thor. Oh, spoke too soon.
Jane?
It's movie squad time. I've got Cecilia and Simon with me, and it is my great honour to be the fly on the wall here. We're going to jump into blockbuster territory next, I take it.
Yes. Thor, Love and Thunder.
You look devastated.
No, not at all. It's just depressing, really, I suppose, because this is the fourth Thor film. It is the 29th entry in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I guess I'm just reflecting on my own life and the hours that I've committed to this world, not including, you know, the multitude of TV series on Disney Plus now, like Moon Knight and WandaVision and et cetera, et cetera. So a lot of Marvel content coming our way. And I don't know about the two of you, but I'm keen to hear. I always felt that the Marvel movies, they had a ceiling to their quality, you know? They were usually about 3.5-4-star movies. Sometimes they were really good, like Black Panther, or I was a really big fan of the first Captain America movie. But the thing you could kind of hang your hat on was that if there's a ceiling, there's also a floor. Like, they're not going to fall beneath that 3-star level. So even at their worst, you can treat them as an episode of the Marvel story. Now, the floor has opened up to, I'll describe it as a cavern to hell, with some of the most recent films. And I think Shang-Chi that came out last year was effectively not fit for release. And I've been really disappointed with a couple of the more recent ones. But that's my opinion. The millions of dollars these movies make suggest that I'm alone. And I do still get excited for these movies because I love a good superhero film. I'm not a cineast who turns his nose up at good, you know, vigilante stories or stories of people with superpowers. And I love the TV show The Boys, which at least skewers it and the concept of being a superhero really nicely. Em, how do you feel about the Marvel movies?
I always get sad, I have to say. Like, my heart just breaks because I'm a massive fan of the graphic novels of X-Men. So from my point of view, I'm like, there's no excuse. There are great characters in there. There are amazing backstories. There's just, I understand it has to be in action, but I don't think action has to come at the sacrifice of, like, sort of mediocre script and no character development, which I always feel like they do. Even when they try, it's not deep enough, and there is the depth there to go into if you're a nerd like myself. So it always leaves me. I feel like the only franchise that did it reasonably well, and again at different points, and probably why it keeps going, is Batman. Marvel has just not hit the pipe for me.
Well, you certainly want to see it improve after 29 films.
Yes.
I'd like to see the arc curve towards, like, wow, it's getting really good now. Cecilia, how do you feel about the Marvel movies?
I think most people who know me know that I'm not a huge fan. It's not because I dislike the films or anything. I'm just not an action person. I'm more of a character development kind of person.
You prefer your rom-coms, your romantic dramas.
No, don't you dare, Simon. Don't you dare. No, I just like a good film that kind of challenges me, and I feel like actions don't necessarily do that. I appreciate the work that goes into the choreography and the visual effects and all of those bits and pieces. And I was very impressed with DC's The Batman.
Yep.
I felt like that was probably one that didn't have a lot of action in it. And I think that's probably why I enjoyed it, because it was more about that character development and the story behind The Batman. So look, I don't dislike Marvel. I just am not a fan of Marvel or the films, and you wouldn't come to me to ask me a question about them because I could not give you the answer at all. I don't know what order to watch them in. I don't know any of that stuff. But look, I'm always prepared to give these films a go.
Yes, well, that's the attitude, and that's certainly the attitude I had. And like I said, I was looking forward to it because the what Marvel does well is create episodic television, episodic stories. And at the end of every one, they're like, well, maybe you didn't enjoy this one, but the next one's going to be really good because you stay after the credits and they give a teaser. So I was more than willing to meet Thor, Love and Thunder halfway, especially because I did really like the last Thor film, Thor Ragnarok, which sort of breathed new life into the Thor saga. It was sort of established as the Shakespearean side of the Marvel movies, and that fell flat. But Taika Waititi, the New Zealand comic and director, he brought an irreverence to it and was pretty happy to sacrifice some of Marvel's sacred cows in favour of this lighter, more striking and Kiwi-esque Thor. So I really did like that film. The problem is, since Thor Ragnarok, Taika Waititi has made Jojo Rabbit, which I wasn't a fan of. He starred in Free Guy, giving probably the most frustrating performance of the last 12 months. And now with Thor Love and Thunder, it definitely feels like he's bought the hype of what Taika Waititi should be. And the film is full of pretty groan-worthy jokes this time around. In this story, Thor, played by Chris Hemsworth, he's teamed up with the Guardians of the Galaxy. He is traveling the cosmos to act as a mercenary, but really he's trying to discover himself, meditate, be one with himself, and understand what his role in the universe is. And that gets very complicated when he runs into his ex-girlfriend, Jane Foster, played by Natalie Portman, who was absent for the last film. She's now 6 foot tall, ripped, dressed as Thor, wielding his ex-hammer, Mjolnir, and calling herself Mighty Thor. So there's a bit of an identity crisis going on there, and he ultimately finds out why she is currently in that guise. But more important is that they team up to fight Gore, the God Butcher, who's played by a former Batman, Christian Bale, who has dedicated his life to killing all the gods in all the universes, which is... I guess a mission that it gets very hard to understand why you would be upset with this guy, because all the gods established in this universe are pretty terrible. So that's the basic premise, but no one really cares about that. You're going to see the latest adventures of Thor in the same way that you picked up the latest, you know, X-Men comic or graphic novel to see what they're getting up to now. And I will say that while I was sitting in the cinema, even though I was rolling my eyes at a lot of the jokes and it does still suffer from a lot of the same issues as recent Marvel movies, it felt fine. It felt like a perfectly enjoyable romp, 3 stars, whatever. But then as time passed, I really did reflect on the seams that are fraying to this movie and how it feels like it's held together by spit and feathers, basically, because a lot of it just does not really work. Now, this isn't a spoiler, but 7 characters die or suffer what appear to be fatal injuries on screen, and then 6 of them are fine. And at this point, you have to go, well, Taika Waititi is either taking the mickey or there really are no stakes to watching these films at all. And I'm not going in with a bloodlust wanting these characters to be killed off, but that cheap kind of emotional moment and then like, oh, no, they're fine. Don't worry about it. Or, oh, no, you can experience watching them in this next film. That is really cheap to me. I was really disappointed that also Christian Bale, who is going for it, you know, he's not just collecting the paycheck. He's going ham in this very villainous role. They don't really put him opposite Chris Hemsworth that much. There's really not that much for Christian Bale to do in a way that would make him a theatrically imposing villain or to really, spend time with him in the way that the Batman last year, even Paul Dano as the Riddler. I mean, he's got his face is, you know, got masking tape covering him, but at least there feels like an antagonism between him and Robert Pattinson in that film. There are just so many other missteps. The film seems to imply that the character played by Tessa Thompson, Valkyrie, who is now the new king of New Asgard, which has been relocated to Earth, that she really doesn't like the administrative side of her job. But as soon as Thor returns to town, that plot line is just shunted aside. It sounds like there's a lot left on the cutting room floor, and what's left is just a bit of a mishmash to just keep the train chugging along to the next movie. And that's always the bummer here, because the argument has always been that, well, the Marvel movies, they're cinematic experiences. You go, you pay your $25, and you see a spectacle on the big screen. But now, putting aside the fact that they look very expensive and they look beautiful, these movies, they don't feel like cinematic efforts. They don't feel like things that are worth your time in a cinema, because you may as well just watch it on Disney Plus in a couple of months' time. It feels like TV now, even more than the episodic structure of the movies did. So Thor: Love and Thunder, even though it's meant to be this, you know, brightly coloured, light in tone and flavour experience, it did make me sad. It made me sad. I was fine at the time, but in retrospect, I go, gosh, are they really going to plumb these depths?
Oh no, is this going the best forward? They can do?
Is this the best they can do? And Doctor Strange, that came out a few months ago, I had similar issues with, just in terms of the pacing and the structure of it, but it had enough weirdness in it. But I think this phase four, this multiverse phase, it does feel like they're treading a lot of water from what has been established in, like, the TV show of Loki, which I really enjoyed. That seemed to promise what was coming next. This really does feel like the seafood extender of the Marvel Universe. You know, they're really just buying some time until they've got another big bad that they can hang their hat on, like Thanos. So Thor: Love and Thunder, look, you've already seen it. If you care about it, came out last week. It made like a gazillion dollars, as these movies do. You already know if you're going to see it or if you're not going to see it. But this is where I think we made the right call last week, Cecilia, to highlight some of the Rev Film Fest movies, to highlight Compartment Number 6. Mm-hmm. Movies like those are much smaller, and there's not as much, you know, to quote-unquote experience on the big screen, but at least you're getting a meal out of the movie. This is fast food, and not in the even in the temporarily satisfying way.
I can't say I'm surprised, because actually, like, I was looking back and I actually loved the first Thor, which was directed by Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah.
I even felt like that kind of had that Shakespearean vibe, but did it, you know, in an enjoyable capacity. But yeah, I have felt the same about the current director. Love his earlier work. Loved What We Do in the Shadows. Love Boy. Like all those
Hunt
kinds
for the
Wilder
of people. Brilliant. Yeah. Even his TV show lately, Our Flag Means Death, is actually quite good.
Yeah, but just doesn't somehow work in these kinds of films. And I don't know why that is, but maybe he has disdain for it as well.
Maybe. and maybe you do, you know. Cecilia, what'll bring you back to the Marvel Universe? What do you need?
Well, I've got about 20 plus films to catch up on first, so I've got to go back and do all that. That could take me years.
No, you don't need to do
that. That could take me 20 years. If I watched one a year, it's 20 years of my life. Look, I should probably give these films a go. But look, it just doesn't pique my interest enough, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there you have it, folks. If you are planning on going and seeing the film, text in 0405 921 921. Movie Squad will be back next week, same time, same channel.
There you have it, two reviews for the price of none, because this is free. Cecilia, thank you so much for joining us again this week. I don't think I've converted you to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, nor was I trying to. But I agree with you. The Batman was really good. I watched that a second time earlier this year, and really, I think I really appreciated what you mentioned, which is there's not a whole lot of action in it. It has a great showpiece car chase, but it's a detective story, and I appreciated that. So, you know, but it's interesting to hear that you're not much of an action fan overall. Are there any action movies that you go, okay, that's a That's a blockbuster that blew me away.
I probably should say I do like the really old 90s, 80s action films.
Yeah,
like
right.
Any Arnie films, I'll go back and watch, like The Last Action Hero, for example. I do
that
like
those.
That
is the first Arnie film you're going to, is The Last Action Hero.
I could have gone to any Arnie
you
film.
Could have said,
Terminator.
Well,
I could have said...
Even Eraser, something like that.
There's so many, but those types of kind of old B-grade films I will go back and watch for action. It's just the kind of new age action stuff that I tend to avoid, but there you go.
I mean,
I appreciate action. I think there's a lot of work that goes into it, the stunts, the design, and, you know, all the artistic side to it. So
absolutely. I genuinely do think, and they've been advocating this for some years now, there should be a stunt Oscar, right? They give a stunt award at the Screen Actors Guild for the stunt men and women who perform. And I think that's a no-brainer to me. Why wouldn't you do that? Cecilia, I think you and I have some homework. We've got to go watch or rewatch The Arrival.
Oh gosh. Actually, I wouldn't mind rewatching that because, I'll give it a go. Sure, why not?
Why not, folks? Thank you for joining us. Tell your friends that they can only get this kind of piercing insight at the Movie Squad podcast. Rate, review, subscribe, resubscribe, subscribe on someone else's phone while they're not looking. Cecilia, it's been an absolute pleasure having you with us for the last few weeks. I know you'll be back soon, no doubt, but Tristan also will be returning to join us for reviews. But thank you so much, Cecilia.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.